That's Sam Tompkins on Three Almost Killed Me and the Pet Shop Boys. Before that, Can You Forgive Her? Maurice Misolowski's in Australia, hopefully. How are you?
Yeah, I am. No, I'm here, Phil. I'm very good, thanks.
Awesome. Well, look, I wanted to talk a little bit about tourism today, Maurice, because yesterday I was talking with Neil, who's our Vietnam correspondent. He was just basically saying that that country is bemoaning the fact that tourism's a bit down, you know, across the board. They're not getting, and then he was going on about tourism awards to get people to come along more. And basically, I just thought, well, it's a massive generalization, but you're hearing it quite a bit, I think. Countries saying tourism is, quote, down. So what are they doing? I mean, is the age of the holiday over?
No, in fact, statistics tell us the exact opposite.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of countries in the world.
Yeah, there are. But when you go to the UN, which I don't want to go to too often, but they use their tourism barometer.
Okay.
So it's a worldwide tourism statistical collection point, yeah?
Yeah.
They are saying, these stats are new, literally in the last week or so, quoting directly, international tourist arrivals hit 96% of pre-pandemic levels in January to July 2024.
All right.
So we've had 790 million tourists travelled internationally across the globe in the first 7 months of this year. It's about 11% more than the previous year, and it's going up and up. It's rising.
That's
so
weird.
Statistically, people are travelling more. And I know that anecdotally as well, through my clients and through the work I do, that we are definitely seeing, and maybe it's an Australian thing, but I think it's also American. And I've heard Europe is completely booked out and hard to get into. Again, Europe's a really big place, so that's not everywhere. But lots of places are booked out. So definitely people are on the move again.
Maybe we were talking particularly about Asia. I mean, again, a massive generalization, but he just said the people in Vietnam are sort of saying, well, it's not as good as it usually is. And there could be any number of reasons for that.
There could be. From Australia's viewpoint, we are sending lots of people to Vietnam. In fact, it's the number two choice of Australians for travel at the moment. Mm. So we're definitely sending some people across. Look, this isn't a perfect world in any sense whatsoever. There are definitely regions and places that are still doing it tough. We haven't recovered totally. But the doom and gloom that we talked about only a couple of years ago, where we were wondering whether anyone would ever get on a plane again or leave where they could physically walk to, has definitely left us. It's in the rear vision mirror. And people are beginning to move. We also got to remember, Phil, that times are a bit tough. I mean, I'm using bit.
That could
it should be
it,
a lot tough.
Basically.
You know, times are a lot tough for a lot of people. And what the phrase that's used here all the time, I know is true, but I'm just so sick of hearing it, disposable income just isn't what it used to be. And it's not going to be for a while. So people are making hard choices. But some of those choices is definitely leading to an increase in travel.
The holiday, you know, the family holiday. Let's not forget, in the sort of 30s, 40s, 50s, whenever that all became big stuff, people didn't go that far, really, did they? I should imagine going to Spain from the UK was monumental. And, of course, now we can get to the other side of the world in a matter of hours. But the holiday, Maurice.
To go back into history, the word motels, especially in the American, Australian sense, were really only a thing of the 1920s.
Oh, yeah.
And they were built because what happened with a motel was you drove to it. So it's different from a hotel.
Yeah.
Mo being motor. And that's exactly where it came from, was a derivative from motor and hotel. So you could motor to it. And to your point, for a very long period of time, from the 20s to about the 60s or 70s, when travel was really expensive, really difficult and really long, that's how most families took their holidays. They got into the car and they went somewhere. I know it's not true for Asia at all, but it is very true for Australia and for for America and those kinds of places.
There is an interesting link here, because when you think about putting a family, mum, dad, couple of kids, whatever, together and arranging the holiday, there was a lot of work went into that one. So maybe it was the sort of Stone Age version of what you would call hyper-personalisation.
Yeah, it was. It absolutely was. Because in those days, you literally just got in the car, you had a destination, and you hoped there was a motel along the way that you could stop at. And if you didn't, you went to the next one until you found one. It was very much about doing what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a car and the kids are driving you crazy, what do? You pull over. I mean, you stop. You know, you go to the local bakery or the local something. And that really was hyper-personalised. And one of the trends I've got for next year is really not dissimilar to that.
Okay.
There's a new term going around, or relatively new term, called soft travel.
Okay.
As one of the trends. And it's bang on what you've just said. And that is that what people are, one of the things that a group of people that are traveling have said that they're looking for is none of that itinerary anymore. They don't want the fixed holiday
stressful,
where, you know, it's 9
right?
o'clock, I've got to get up, I've got to go to lunch at 12, see 12 temples, be here. They don't want that. So a growing number of people, about 20% of people at this stage, are saying they want what's called soft travel, which is they're prioritising simplicity and spontaneity.
Love it.
Just get me to a place, you know, get me to Vietnam, book me some really good hotels or whatever hotels suit, good being the ones that suit me, not necessarily better or worse, but they suit me, and kind of leave me there for X number of days and I'll get around and do stuff on my own. And there's a really interesting growth happening around that too. And that is the use of local tourist guides, which you can now find in apps and book them the day before,
or you can book them
earlier if you want. But there's a, it's an absolute gig, and it is making people, ordinary people, really people in Hong Kong that know the best dim sum or where to get vegetarian food, or, you know, the best temples to look at, or the best something or others, can literally put together a 2-3 hour tour, and with no expense can put it onto these sites, and then have people, should they wish to be taken on these tours, pay them for it. And it's all done in that intermediary type stuff, you know, like Uber, where the app gets paid and they pay you type stuff.
Yep.
So you don't need to worry about any of
personalized,
that.
Personalised, isn't it? It's not like you're in a massive tour group.
Riding in this kind of atmosphere, it's really hyper-personalised. You, as the tour guide, can set parameters. You don't, I mean, you're not accepting a booking just because someone's made it. You can set parameters, how many people as a minimum. You can, of course, accept or reject the job. All of those things are possible. But this soft travel is really about trying to get inside Hong Kong, for example, by seeing it through the eyes of the people who live there. Really big trend.
So that is really the opposite of the family holiday. There's something I've been hearing about which is kind of cool. What's a sleep retreat, apart from the obvious?
Yeah, absolutely. So just going back to that for a sec, Phil, if I can. The one of the apps that I was talking about, and the one that I use the most, is called Get Your Guide. Get Your Guide.
Okay.
And that's available on the usual mobiles and smartphones and things. And you can, as I said, become a tour operator, so to speak, around that.
Yep.
So this one of the other trends. So this comes out of a list that I've just put together about 2025 travel trends. One of the other things that has become obvious, or a part of what many hotels are now offering, are the opportunity to sleep.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is something hotels have always done, because you've gone in there to sleep overnight, so hopefully that remains the same. But what they're saying is that they're talking to the traveller who feels overwhelmed, who's working constantly, who just wants to really disconnect and get away from the world. And what they're saying is that our hotel offers you those opportunities. Some hotels go to the extreme. It's not just hotels. It's tourism providers go to the extreme where there's no Wi-Fi available by choice. So you know you're going to that place, no Wi-Fi, disconnect.
Yep.
They're offering spa treatments. They're doing things inside of the room that make the internet less usable by choice again. So what they're saying is, look, if you really want to disconnect, you can still come and enjoy our facilities or whatever else we offer. We'll make sure that the outside world doesn't disturb you any more than you want it to.
That sounds rather cool, actually. What about lounging in bed all day? There's a cool name for that.
You know, that's what...
We've got a little bit of a delay here, so...
We do. So another one, Phil, another one of these strange words that I've come across that I think is in next year's trends is the word of frolleagues.
Okay.
F-R-O-L-L-E-A-G-U-E-S, frolleagues. Very strange. It's obviously a collaborative word.
Hmm.
Again, about 30% of travellers, this is from another research piece, not that I did, someone else did, said that what they were trying to do now, as distinct from pre-COVID, was to take holidays with colleagues who are friends.
Okay.
And also, as part of this, is to really blend work and leisure together. So what they're saying is, look, if I have to travel to Hong Kong or to Melbourne or somewhere else for work, I'm going to take a day either side or some extra time, and I'm going to do some leisure as well as travel. So it's not just traveling anymore. And the other big thing that's riding is, which is something I think we always did as travellers, and that is we travel more with friends. There seems to be a lot of friends travelling together now.
friends and colleagues, yeah. And again, this comes down to one thing. It's your choice. You're not being slammed in with a group. You're not with family members who you'd rather leave at home. So it's all, again, personalisation. Is that really the big difference that we're looking forward to?
Yeah, it is. It's always been the holy grail of travel. I've talked about it for decades, literally for decades, with my tourism and hospitality clients, that what people want when they get somewhere is what they used to get when we travelled before all this nonsense. And that is, you turn up at the front door, the person actually knows who you are.
Yeah.
They have a great big smile on their face. They want you, they truly, truly want you to come and stay with them, and you're going to have a terrific time. We kind of lost that when the hotels became homogenous, the same thing to everybody, walk in the front door in the lobby, check in and then go disappear. But people, humans, have never really lost the desire for the other thing. And we're seeing that really push back in big time now. Treat me as a human, not as a number. I really want you to pretend at the very least that I'm important to you, that my room is exactly as I want it to be, and that the facilities stand up to what I want them to be as well.
Does a lot of this come down to people working ridiculously hard and wanting the opposite of that? It seems to.
Yeah, it does, which is what always travel always did. It always gave us respite away from work. The difference in the last 20 years or so, especially 10 years, is that for many of us, we had the ability to leave work at 5 o'clock, euphemistically, because nothing followed home. We didn't have internet. Nobody would dare make a phone call to us after 5. So we had that retreat, and we also had the weekend off because, again, work for most people going back 10 years or so didn't follow you. It now follows most people everywhere.
Right.
So incessantly what we're saying is, even though we could disconnect ourselves for whatever reason we choose not to, but we're going to make a conscious effort when we travel to really get rid of all those distractions, all the work and everything else out of our lives, and to really immerse ourselves in where we're going and participate, really do what we want to do when we get there.
Talking of sort of removing yourself from work stuff, how is that Do Not Disturb law going down in Australia?
The one about telephones?
The one about don't bother me when it's the weekend stuff or after a certain time.
So you're right, that was a law that came in. It only affects businesses, I think, over 18 people, which is a relatively medium size. So far we have had no court cases on it whatsoever, which will be the true litmus test of it. I'm not sure I've heard many people talk about it, Phil, since it's come in. It was a really great idea. It most probably is working in some environments, but I've not heard it be anything other than a past law.
So it strikes me, just from having our brief chat today, that holidaying in the future will be themed, but it's very much the theme you want. It's either, it's not like just, I keep saying the family packs off together like they used to, but there's things like no drinking holidays or what about experiential holidays? How do you see that?
Yeah. So what I think we've gone back to are the explorers of old.
Oh, yeah.
The times when people left, and I'm going back 300-400 years ago or whatever, you know, the notion these are all romantic, none of us were there, but the notion that we left and we just want to experience the world, we want to immerse ourselves in it, not just run through it, that's really, I think, what's underlying this as well, that desire for us to really experience the world, not just a ticket off the bucket list and say, I've been to Macau or I've been somewhere else.
Final question from me, Maurice, because it's nearly news time. Bearing in mind the habits of young people now, they're fully functional with their apps and this, that and the other. Are they more likely, the Gen Alphas, to perhaps travel solo?
Absolutely, because they know that they can connect whenever they need to. Travelling solo for them is just literally getting on a plane with their apps and with the world that they can take with them. They can be anywhere, talk to anybody and do anything. And you also find that their travel is more immediate. They tend to get together with groups of people. They tend to do all kinds of things. It makes solo travel now a really rich experience for them.
So, I mean, nothing drastically changing this and for the next few years, is there particularly?
I don't think so, except for this pushback, except for, even though anecdotally it appears that people aren't travelling, that people have gone back and travelled. I know all the airlines in the world are retrieving the planes that haven't flown for them in the last 4 years. They're desperately trying to get them back into the air because demand is so high. And again, this very big push into see the individual when they come to your lodging or to your entertainment or whatever else. Don't just treat me like a number anymore. That really is the pushback that we're getting, or what data's telling us.
Just desperately trying to get some conclusion here. I suppose the word choice is a word that would come up front.
It is, and again, it's a post-COVID response, I think. You know, I want to be seen, I want to be heard, and I waited for this. For many people, it's still revenge travel, although we're just at the end of that, meaning during COVID, we desperately want to get away, so we promised ourselves we would. We're seeing the tail end of that now. Most people have made that trip already, and now they want to experience the world a bit differently.
All right, Maurice, we're going to leave it there. More on that and all sorts of other fun things, mauricefuturist.com. Thank you, Maurice Misolowski, all the way from Melbourne. So let's just quick